crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtigal. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, where events this past week regarding the relationship between Germany and Israel have taken center stage. There's even been a number of articles in the German press about it as well, and even one we'll cover in the Canadian press. And it seems that we are coming to a point, really a sea change in the relationship between the two countries, noting the change that's taken place, not necessarily in Israel, but rather with the German population over the past two decades. What we've seen over the past decade and a half, or 12 years, I guess it is, the period which Angela Merkel has been in power in Germany as the chancellor there, we've really seen a relationship between the two countries that mirrors her personal view, her personal feelings towards the Jewish state, and probably her personal, the way that she feels that Germany is responsible towards Israel, in the sense that they need to make sure, because of their past, that they are favorable towards Israel, that they do give them a helping hand. And we've seen that in numerous trade ventures between the two nations. We've seen that economic ties, them even having joint sessions of parliament together at times. But is that changing? Have we been fooled, really, by this decade of good relationship between Germany and Israel because of the leadership of Angela Merkel? Has that been hiding the growing sense among the German population that isn't as favorable towards the Jews, that doesn't believe that they need to continue to express the shame that they have expressed since the Second World War for their actions? And of course, the Second World War, in which 6 million Jews were slaughtered during the Holocaust at the hands of Hitler's regime. Throughout, since that time, there has been a collective shame among the German people, and at least a remembrance of it as well, and that they felt like it was their moral duty to ensure that didn't happen again. And in doing so, they educated their people about it, about the actions that their forefathers took. Well, we might be seeing a change. We might be seeing a change now, and this is coming up because just this week, a member of the parliament, of the Bundestag, and the foreign minister of Angela Merkel was here in Israel, and no doubt you've heard about this and the spat between Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Sigmar Gabriel, when they were due to meet and have discussions, this foreign minister, while he was visiting. And yet that meeting didn't take place. And why that meeting didn't take place is because that Mr. Netanyahu gave Mr. Gabriel an ultimatum, saying that if you continue with your plans to meet with Breaking of the Silence, a group that is trying to, really does report on, with anonymous testimonies, it reports on apparent human rights abuses that the Israeli military and Israeli soldiers has done against the Palestinians, has perpetrated against the Palestinians. And it's considered all across Israel, of course, this group as being anti-Israeli. They want to send eventually their own soldiers to the International Criminal Court. And Mr. Netanyahu came out and said, well, it's not his policy to meet with foreign visitors who on diplomatic trips to Israel meet with groups that slander IDF soldiers as war criminals. And rightfully so, if you're coming to my country, the country that I'm the head of, the only democracy in the Middle East, then why would you meet up with this anti-Israeli group? And he asked him not to do that, and Mr. Gabriel decided that, well, it was more important for him to meet with this group instead of the Prime Minister of Israel. Now, this is interesting because the German government as a whole has been very supportive of Israel for decades, and especially under the successive parliaments or governments of Angela Merkel. And yet here we are, we're seeing a break between the government position of Germany and the government of Israel. And this is significant, again, because over the past decade, we haven't really seen that. The German government has been very pro-Israel, as I said. And yet, in the background of this, we have a German population that is growing dissatisfied with its government's relationship with the Jews, with its government's relationship with Israel. And so now that it looks that the Merkel era, after 12 years in power, might be coming to a close, we need to ask ourselves whether that her being removed from office, whether that anti-Jewish sentiment is going to be restrained, as it has been over the past 10 to 12 years. Now, the response from the German government, of course, from Merkel's government, was trying to downplay this incident between Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Gabriel, saying that it wouldn't really affect the long-term relations of the two countries. And really, it probably won't in the short term. But this, it's important to see Mr. Gabriel's actions as not being enigmatic. They are a reflection of the current majority of Germans. There was an op-ed entitled "Bibi's Theatrics" in Deutsche Welle, written by Dagmar Engel, and it kind of gives the position of the German population, how they completely see Mr. Gabriel as being in the right in this episode, and Mr. Netanyahu being in the wrong. But it also shows that they have quite a disdain for Israel's current leader. Now, of course, Mr. Netanyahu, while he has been in power quite a long time here, there's plenty of Israelis that obviously don't support what he's doing. And yet he does retain the majority. Most Israelis feel safe with him in power, and that's probably why he's the candidate there, because he does put Israel's interests first. But we see a lot of governments throughout Europe right now labeling the Netanyahu government as being anti-democratic, which I find really shocking. Very, very shocking. Well, this is what Dagmar Engel said in her piece. She wrote, "An even more unpleasant development is the boost in domestic support Netanyahu receives in trying to interfere with organizations he is opposed to." So, I mean, this author from Germany is taking a shot not just at Mr. Netanyahu, but at the people of Israel. Why does such a tyrant, in her eyes, receive such domestic support? Why does he have the support of the Israeli population? Again, you're going to have people that don't support him, but the majority does. Then she writes, "That sounds more like Russia and Turkey and less like the region's only democracy, Israel." Now, that is kind of shocking to me to hear an author in Germany write that, comparing Mr. Netanyahu to the likes of Putin or Erdogan, that don't have freedom of the press at all, that have, basically become dictators, increasingly powerful in their countries, especially after the referendum that just passed in Turkey a couple of weeks ago, which allows Erdogan to be able to remain in power till 2029, that gives him supreme power to dismiss cabinet officials without going to parliament, gives him supreme power to dismiss parliament if he wants. And then going back to the coup half a year earlier, the failed coup that Mr. Erdogan used to basically rid the military, and then in the aftermath, the public service of anyone that is against his rule. And so that's you're comparing, this German author is comparing Mr. Netanyahu to him or to Putin that has been taking over foreign nations, that has supported the Assad regime in Syria, that because of him being there, actually, the Assad regime has been able to continuously murder you know, more of its people, even engage in the chemical acts that we've seen. There's about five or six of them right now. Just the latest one using sarin has got the most publicity, but he's been using chlorine gas on his people for years. Of course, these are agents, when you're talking about sarin, that the Russians said that they had come into an agreement with Assad to get out of the country. And yet, you know, because of Russia, Assad's been able to use those chemical agents on his people. And again, this is who this German author is comparing Mr. Netanyahu's government to. Again, this is what she said. I'm just going to read this full quote again. "An even more unpleasant development is the boost in domestic support Netanyahu receives in trying to interfere with organizations he is opposed to, such as this anti-Israeli organization. There's nothing wrong with being opposed to that. I think if they want to drag your drag the soldiers, those that are defending Israelis, to the criminal court and say that they have committed these atrocities against the Palestinians, I would say that'd be a good thing to be opposed to if you're a prime minister of that country, the leader really of the armed forces." Anyhow, she says, "That sounds more like Russia and Turkey and less like the region's only democracy, Israel. Netanyahu's move against NGOs is another urgent matter for the foreign ministers to discuss when, not if, they meet again." Now, what she's saying there is that this is what Germany, well, at least her, Germany and others, believe is most important. It is the attack on freedoms by the Netanyahu government inside Israel. When, from where I'm sitting in Jerusalem, I mean, you can look around the Middle East and there's plenty more places that you would choose before attacking Israel, Israel's democracy, Israel's freedom of the freedom of the press. I mean, it's quite the unfair comparison. All you need to do is read Haaretz any day of the week and you'll dismiss the notion instantly that there isn't freedom of the press in Israel. Those papers, if you're looking, if you're comparing back to Turkey, Turkey and Russia, papers like Haaretz don't exist anymore that are so anti-government. They don't exist. They don't have a mouthpiece in Russia. They no longer have a mouthpiece in Turkey over the acts because of Erdogan's acts over the past year. Pretty much most, if not all, of their media outlets right now in those two countries do fall in line with the government's position. And that definitely doesn't exist in Israel. And yet, this is what this lady believes, this German lady believes, in Deutsche Welle, that Mr. Gabriel should be talking to Mr. Netanyahu about. Not the dangerous situation that exists right now with Iran marching across the Middle East, what they're doing in Syria, don't talk about what, you know, what's happening to Israel's north with 150,000 rockets and missiles pointed south towards Israel. They're not the threats. They're not the things. Islamic State, even, that's not what needs to be talked about. What needs to be talked about are Israel's sins, Israel's follies. Now, this, again, is interesting because it was the decision of the government this time under the Foreign Minister Gabriel to decide that, yeah, I agree with the Deutsche Welle piece, basically, in saying that the real problem, the real thing that needs to be addressed is not Israel's dangerous position in the world, just living amongst a hotbed of enemies. No, it's Israel itself. It's Israel itself. That Germany would push for this meeting with the anti-Israeli NGO instead of accepting the request of a longtime ally, when really Mr. Netanyahu did want to discuss those real threats, it really indicates the priority that Germany is placing, or the pressure that Germany is placing on Israel to try and be more inclusive with these, what Israel views as anti-Israeli groups. And that's kind of shocking. This is what I believe this was Carolyn Glick from her piece that she wrote this week on this issue. She said, "Gabriel's decision to opt for a meeting with Breaking of the Silence over a meeting with Netanyahu took matters one step forward. In acting as he did, Gabriel showed that he, as he sees things, Israel's elected leader is less legitimate than representatives of an organization that legitimizes German anti-Semitism." So that's what she is equating this group breaking of the silence with, a group that really does further German anti-Semitism. And she's right. And she's right. She is talking about this position of Germany that looks to increase the power of Israel's enemies. And she even goes on to with some statistics of talking about how this group Breaking the Silence is funded heavily from Germany, began in 2002, and there's a lot of European nations that do fund this. This is their NGO, really, operating inside Israel, and they are a representative of German anti-Semitism. That's what Carolyn Glick writes. Now, we really do need to sit up and really take notice of what's happening here. It's easy to let the facade of the Merkel era skew our perception of how the German public has moved in the past decade in reference to their relationship, their thoughts about Israel. Yeah, it's dangerous for Israel, even to some of its leaders, to view the warmth of the Merkel government, as it has been, as the will of the majority of Germans, because it's not that. It's not that. There is a highly dangerous anti-Israelism, anti-Semitism that pervades the German mainstream. And it's been that way for a decade, but it's just been hidden. It's been hidden behind the powerful leadership and restrained, I would say, by the leadership of Ms. Merkel. And again, I think while she might be running again for another term, I mean, what about if she doesn't get in power? Will the next leader of Germany be as much of a restraining force on anti-Semitism that does exist inside Germany? In 2008, the BBC sponsored a survey that showed that Germans were among Europeans with the least favorable views of Israel. Bertelsmann Foundation poll in 2007 showed that 3 in 10, this is 2007, 3 in 10, it's only got worse, 3 in 10 Germans have no qualms comparing Israel today to fascist Germany. 30%. And we wonder why there's the rise in the AfD party inside Germany when 30% of Germans don't have a problem comparing Israel today to fascist Germany. 30% of Germans aren't merely indifferent towards Israel, they actually believe the Jewish state is akin to Hitler's Germany. Isn't that crazy? Well, in May 2008, there was another poll conducted for Germany's ZDF television, and that further exposed the painful reality of Germans' true feelings for Israel. It said 53% of Germans said they have no special responsibility towards Israel because of their nation's history. That's interesting because they're the exact words that Merkel said in 2008 in a speech in the Knesset. She said that we have a special responsibility towards Israel given our history. Well, more than half of Germans disagree with her. And what did that do? What does that do? It reduces the policy of Ms. Merkel as not really a representative, a representation of the people. It's her personal view. It's not the view of Sigmar Gabriel, even, it seems. Now, it's interesting to think about those stats being 2008, almost 10 years ago now. And as the generation that remembers World War II dies out more and more, it's this new generation of Germans that are really less inhibited by the actions of their Nazi forefathers. There's going to be more and more that come on the scene that don't feel the shame that was felt 10 years ago, the shame that was felt 20 years ago. They don't feel the remorse. They don't feel any type of responsibility. And indeed, they didn't commit the crimes. And yet, if you knew something in your nation's history that took place and was as horrific as the Holocaust, where your nation systematically and your forefathers systematically put a people to death, trying to ethnically cleanse them from the face of the earth, you would at least have a message that ensures that it wouldn't happen again. And that you would feels some type of special responsibility to that nation to ensure that you are doing all you can to make sure your people remember what happened and make sure you remember how easy it was for your nation to be susceptible to a leader such as Hitler. And instead of just blaming Hitler the man, you would have to recognize what is possible to happen again. I mean, the Germans' forefathers, Germans four generations ago, I mean, they say it still have the same nature as Germans today, as humans today. So at least there should be a recognition that it's possible again. And because of that, there should be this special relationship that is maintained, or a special responsibility that is maintained between Germany and Israel. Now, here is this same poll. Well, I just want that same poll back in 2008 said that among 30 to 39 year olds, only 29% believe their nation bears any special responsibility towards the Jewish state. And then it said that if Israel was attacked, 57% said that Germany should not support Israel with money. A mere 13% believe Germany should send troops to help. 81% of Germans believe their government should not send troops to Israel's defense if it were attacked. Now, this is the part of the population of Germany. This is what they think. Again, it's not every German, but Germany as a whole is growing tired of this special responsibility that Ms. Merkel feels to the Jewish state. Again, back in 2008, Ms. Merkel did deliver that powerful speech inside the Knesset when she expressed repentance for those German atrocities back in World War II, and she pledged that Germany would, quote, never abandon Israel, but instead will remain a loyal partner and friend. That's what she said. Now, a day after that, Jerusalem Post's Manfred Gerstenfeld, he wrote a column noting what we're talking about today, this dichotomy between the German chancellor and her people. He said, quote, few in Israel realize that a majority of Germans probably disagree with several key statements she made here about her country's past, including the mention of shame and guilt in the Knesset. In contemporary Germany, he writes, there are significant expressions of anti-Semitism and racism. This includes attacks on Jews, their cemeteries, the Holocaust monuments, together with ongoing anti-Semitic prejudice towards Jews among significant parts of the population. Then he said, at the same time, there are efforts in Germany to rewrite the past. Books by historian Jörg Friedrich, who compares the Allied actions to his nation's atrocities during the war, are best sellers. They promote Holocaust equivalence by using Nazi semantics to describe the Allied bombings of Germany during World War II. Another aspect of the same attitude is expressed by the many Germans who think that Israel is now showing Nazi-like behavior towards the Palestinians. What they mean is to say, if everybody's guilty, then nobody is. So that was what was written in the Jerusalem Post back in on March 19, just after the day after Ms. Merkel gave that speech. And his point was, this again is the personal feeling, the personal view of Ms. Merkel, what she expressed inside the Knesset. The shame and the guilt that she may feel does not pervade German society anymore. It doesn't. It's been done away. And we need to ask ourselves, is that a good thing? That it's disappearing quickly. And we need to ask ourselves, considering Merkel's inspiring leadership, that might be leaving. That might be, or her tenure might be coming to an end. We have to ask ourselves, would the next leader of Germany be so friendly towards the Jews? Or will it be somebody like Sigmar Gabriel, who has a view that reflects the majority view, the majority opinion in Germany? Germans, by majority, are sick of feeling guilt and shame of World War II, and indeed they believe it's time to completely move on. Now, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll look at a powerful article from Friday exposing this fact that for Germany, the new generation is tired of the shame for Nazi crimes. We'll take a break and then we'll be right back.
KPCG 101.3, Trumpet Radio, is your source of understanding. Trumpet Radio broadcasts from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College in Edmond, Oklahoma, and online at kpcg.fm. Thank you for listening. Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is Watch Jerusalem on kpcg.fm.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're talking about the diplomatic spat between German Foreign Minister Sigmar Gabriel and Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and how they did not meet one another. And we're asking whether this reflects a sign, or this is a sign, that the post-war love affair between Germany and the Jews is nearing its end. Considering just how this is a representative of the German government, here we have the foreign minister down in Israel, and he's choosing to meet with an anti-Israeli group over the prime minister. Now, I just want to quote an article that appeared on Friday. This was in the National Post. It's written by Robert Fulford, and the title of this article is "In a Restless Germany, a New Generation Tires of the Shame for Nazi Crimes." He starts it out this way. Like Ivanka Trump visiting on Tuesday, everyone who goes to Berlin has to see Germany's Holocaust Museum, titled Memorial to the Murdered Jews of Europe. It's an impressive and ambitious monument, 2,711 big concrete slabs arranged in a grid pattern on a sloping field. It was designed by the American architect Peter Eisenman at a cost of 25 million euros. The slabs evoke memories of graveyards and are arranged to produce an uneasy, confusing atmosphere as if an ordered system had lost touch with human reason. Situated in the city center, just a block from the 18th century neoclassical Brandenburg Gate, it won't let anyone ever forget the greatest crime of the 20th century began here, at the core of Nazi Germany. When the memorial was finished and dedicated in 2005, it was applauded for its power, but notice this. But in recent years, opinion has shifted. Many Germans think it may be altogether too powerful. They have begun to believe that they have been shamed enough by Germany's horrendous genocide. They want to move on. They want to move on. And this is what's happened in the space of 12 years. And these are the years that Merkel came in power. It was finished the very year that she came into power. And at the time, it was applauded for its power of the memory of what took place, what began right there in Berlin, and how they needed to have a memorial in that city to remember those deeds, to remember those actions. And yet, just these 12 years later, they've begun to believe that it's time to move on. Now, I'm not going to read all of this article by Mr. Fulford. I'll include it in the notes of the show down below so that you can read it yourself. But he concludes it this way. He says, "The saddest summary of the controversy over the memorial came from the architect, Peter Eisenman. In an interview with the weekly Die Zeit, he said that it couldn't be built today. here we are, just 12 years later after it was built, and the architect is saying, it's impossible. If we had to build that again, we would not be able to. Why? Why? This is what he writes. In his view, the currents of xenophobia and anti-Semitism now flowing through the German body politic would not allow him to erect such a monument in the nation's capital. The principle that the Habermas generation spread, that victims of the Holocaust deserved permanent commemoration, has faded. Then Eisenman, the architect of the memorial, says, quote, the social climate has changed. Much of what was long considered to be accepted is now being questioned. It's now being questioned in Germany. It's now being questioned whether they need to hold on to the memory of their acts during World War II. I just find it really interesting that this man, this architect, recognizes the change that's happened over the past decade. A change that has been kind of covered up by a change in the population that's kind of been covered up and more difficult to see purely because of Ms. Merkel's power inside government as being a friend with Israel. Well, maybe she's coming towards the end of her tenure in office. And maybe there isn't going to be that restraining force inside the German government anymore. I mean, a pro-Israel platform, obviously, is not going to win anyone any votes in Germany anymore. And from Israel's standpoint, because of this, they should begin asking some really hard questions. They should ask, can Israel trust Germany? Can Israel trust Germany? Now, 50 years ago, you would say absolutely not. 40 years ago, probably not. 30 years ago, I don't think so. 10 years ago, well, maybe. They look like they have repented. What about right now? What we've seen just over this past week is really a sign that the government of Germany is starting to reflect the prevailing thought of the population. It is. And that is a population, by majority, that is not friendly towards Israel, that more readily would stand alongside, as the foreign minister of Germany did, groups such as Breaking of the Silence, instead of supporting Israel's prime minister. Now, what's happened over the past week is really interesting when you consider where this fits into biblical prophecy. And the Bible has a lot to say about the relationship between Germany and Israel in this end time. And you can read about that in greater detail by requesting our book, Jerusalem in Prophecy, and specifically concerning a prophecy written over in Hosea chapter 5 and verse 13. It says this, I just want to read this prophecy to you. It says, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah, that is the nation of Israel today, saw his wound, then went Ephraim to the Assyrian, and the Assyrian again is Germany. The ancient Assyria has largely makes up the German nation today. And if you want some proof of that, you can request our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, and I'll leave a link to that as well. Well, it says here that when Judah saw his wound, and his wound likely does relate to this issue with the Palestinians that isn't going away, and that the Germans seem to be wanting to put to the forefront of the issue pile, even though Israel is being absolutely besieged by on all sides. It's a Palestinian issue that the Germans want to talk about most, and that's even why Sigmar Gabriel decided to meet with Breaking of the Silence. Anyhow, when Judah, though this nation of Israel, sees its wound and it needs help, what's it do? It says it goes to the Assyrian. It goes to Germany for help. And yet this prophecy says, yet could he not heal you, nor cure you of your wound? He couldn't help you, even though Israel is backed into such of a corner that it goes to the German nation for help. Now, this isn't all bad news, and if you want to really study into this yourself, you can see that there is a positive solution to this in the end. But for the time being, this trend that we're seeing inside Germany, where we have the majority of the nation forgetting or wanting to forget and don't feel the shame of what happened in the Second World War, That trend does really fit into Bible prophecy, where we have a German nation that's turned to by Israel because they are lacking friends and they are hopeful in this relationship. Israel turns to Germany, but Germany is going to end up double-crossing the Jews once again. Now, again, this isn't all negative because there's some positive solutions to that that come after that double cross. And if you want to read up about that, and I definitely recommend you do so, please request this book, Jerusalem in Prophecy. There's many prophecies in that book that it's only short. I guess it's probably about 70 or 80 pages. But there's many prophecies inside that book that have already happened, already come to pass, and that can testify to the accuracy of the prophecies in the later portion of that book as well. Prophecies that are looking like they're much closer to being fulfilled because of this dangerous trend that we're seeing right now inside Germany. Thanks again for listening today. We're at the end of our program of Watch Jerusalem. Please, if you'd like to send us some feedback, you can do that by emailing us at letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week.